Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. It is our honor to be with John Dean talking about America over the last 50 years. We've specifically done 40 of those. Looking at this country is always interesting to me, just inherently, but I also think that it's interesting in the larger world because we are sort of the 800-pound gorilla. As we learn what it is to be a nation governing itself, or failing to do that, we also have a lot of impact on what the rest of the world sees and does, and it's both a give and a take. Just in that 40 or 50 years, I'm not sure we've done well in showing how democracy should work. What do you think?
I think we've had our moments. I think, for example, Eisenhower was a greatly respected president. I'm thinking, well, let's go back even to FDR and what we did for the world during World War II. If not going back to Wilson and World War I. When I think of the more modern presidents, the post-FDR, Truman certainly had widespread respect. His Marshall Plan, which he was clever enough not to name after himself as the Truman Plan, but rather to designate somebody else because Truman kept, in a sense, took the politics out of it.
And George Marshall was widely revered. I was going to say regarded, but revered.
And really set an American standard when we helped Europe get back on its feet. So I think that, you know, then you go on into the Eisenhower administration. He was greatly respected as a result of what he'd done during World War II, his effort to go to Korea and end the mess there as best he could, his disposition to stay out of wars in South Vietnam and what have you when people were encouraging to do otherwise, his famous farewell on the military-industrial complex didn't make us much of an imperial nation in certainly those presidents' eyes. The Kennedy administration, as short-lived as it was, left us in rather favorable eyes in most of the world. I think also, you know, we don't know what would have happened had Lyndon Johnson not escalated Vietnam, but we didn't start winning friends and influencing people when we did that. I think Johnson's policy on civil rights encouraged a lot of the world and the human rights movement. I think his Vietnam policy was a disaster and certainly did not leave us in good light, and we sort of see it going down when Nixon gets there. Not that Nixon isn't respected on the world stage. He knows the players like few presidents ever have. His China initiative remains and will always be a historic move.
Nixon could have done that.
Nobody could have, because a Richard Nixon would have attacked somebody other than himself and did it.
<That's right>.
Viciously.
Viciously, right. But as somebody, given his anti-communist and Cold War warrior status, he could do it with no problem. His policy of detente with Russia, his disarmament moves were respected. He wasn't winning hearts, but he wasn't offending. As I come down through, the Ford administration really didn't do much. It was just sort of there. It's kind of Henry Kissinger was still there, and it's sort of an extension of the end of the Vietnam War, where I think Nixon genuinely didn't try to prolong that war longer than he thought, but his concern was he didn't want to lose it on his watch. I think we're seeing that today, of course, again. Another president doesn't want to see a mess that he happened to start end on his watch as the mess it is. But Nixon, as I say, and Ford, they didn't lose the respect of the world. Carter, I think, was much admired by other countries in the world.
And still is.
And even his post-presidency has even escalated him into a world figure the likes of which few prior and former presidents we've ever had.
Right.
Maybe Hoover. You have to go back to Herbert Hoover almost to find somebody who has that kind of respect. Then we get down into the Reagan years. I wasn't traveling a lot abroad in those days. I don't know, you know, Reagan, I think people didn't think was the brightest president we had, and
that there might be a reason for that.
There might be a reason for that. that he was good with a script, but there wasn't much there, and
they. And people really didn't look behind the screen that Nixon put that Reagan put up. The Wizard of Oz kind of comes to mind for me in that.
Well, that's what, you know, of course, the manipulation and the image making of the presidency really starts with Nixon, who had once suffered from not understanding television, to the other extreme where he started using it as an effective tool, not like is even to the degree today where every setting is pre-programmed, where the exact angles will be planned and it's tightly controlled and orchestrated. So Reagan, I'm not sure, but let's just again Clinton. The world was pretty
you
much.
Did miss Bush won.
Well, I mean, I also didn't end the Cold War, but I think that I don't think you can give credit to Reagan for ending the Cold War. This is something that starts long before he gets there, and to give him the credit is to misunderstand a policy that really started during Truman's years with the containment through George Kennan and holds forth as standard operating procedure rather than trying to see how many missiles we can fire into some third world country. We actually, tried to hold them back, and we went and tried
to contain. Diplomacy was absolutely essential to that.
Absolutely essential and a key part and element of the policies of that era. Bush won. I think Bush won had good rapport with a lot of world leaders. Bush won was smart. He believed in diplomacy. I don't think he wanted to rush into war with Iraq when it was in Kuwait actually, but he stayed out of Iraq too when Saddam went into Kuwait. But he had to do something because I think as Alan Greenspan has recently said, there was a clear policy on Saddam's part to take over and control the oil in the Middle East, and that would have had real repercussions for the entire world.
He also violated international norms by invading Kuwait. I mean, it was unambiguous, which makes
pure act of war.
Exactly,
pure act of war, no question. And it took a while. People like Dick Cheney, who was Secretary of Defense then, were urging that the president not bother to get the consent of Congress and just go on and do something and ignore the War Powers Act. Fortunately, in fact, I've read some recent material, some archival material, that Cheney was running around his own Defense Department people to the White House trying to sell them on various schemes that he went very secretly. But fortunately, he was getting some things don't change. To sell Bush on going to war, ignoring Congress, and some really crazy schemes that got shot down. Bush did finally go to Congress and get permission. He did it and got a respectable vote, so the Congress authorized his action. Which I think we stand in better light in the world when we act collectively and.
Well, he also engaged many other nations substantially.
Well, his coalition was the legitimate coalition.
It was a real coalition.
It was a real coalition, and the world was rather united on that. So it was that was good foreign policy and good for the nation in the eyes of the rest of the world. Clinton doesn't really have an awful lot on his watch of significant magnitude. He's well respected. People don't understand, this nonsense about why it became an impeachable offense to lie about sex with an intern. The French particularly thought that might be standard procedure.
They thought it was part of a campaign strategy.
And as you point out, the hypocrisy of that is just stunning.
Remarkable. As I say in the book at one point, if they had the adultery standard for voting on impeachment, I'm not sure you could have other than maybe a few women in the Congress who had not committed adultery.
You
couldn't get a quorum, but you couldn't get any votes either. So it just wouldn't have happened. So that really didn't affect us in the eyes of the world, but we certainly have seen since George Bush and after the whole world being behind us the following 9/11, a total disintegration. I've traveled from the Middle East to Australia on various trips, and they don't understand what we're doing. They don't understand this president, why we particularly would re-elect him after we knew what he was. They don't get it, and I'm not sure that we get it.
That seems to be a major part of the challenge. I try to keep informed about what goes on in the world. But you, in this your latest book, have laid out a case, being a good lawyer, that is, it's devastating, it's also nauseating. I found myself feeling ill as I read through this. Your representations about what has happened to the legislative branch, what has happened to the executive branch, and what has happened to the judicial branch, in every case are alarming and very depressing, and I think a legitimate source of concern about the future well-being of this country, and to the extent this country affects the rest of the world, It's scary. And
Amen.
I say that, as you put it. But I want to. You've done, I think, a real service and an excellent job of laying out the particulars in this. And in a way, and this is part of, you know, sort of follows on the history you just went through. You talked at the beginning of this book about process and how important process is, and look at each of these institutions, the three parts of the government, from essentially a process perspective, and the current administration, by your telling, appears to have done more damage to that process. That's not to say they've acted alone, but more damage to these processes, the governmental processes, than has probably occurred in the history of this country.
And let me just interject that you call it broken government for a reason.
Yes, I do. Well, you know, people have a sort of a visceral reaction to the word process because they don't really understand that's what they're truly interested in. Mm-hmm. Most people think, well, policy, but that happens to, when you look at the academic research I was unable to dig out, that policy will make more eyes glaze than process, because people, while they don't know what a motion to recommit is in the House, they don't know what a cloture vote is in the Senate, they do know when they're getting screwed.
Yep.
And they understand that perfectly well. And from the Constitution to the rules and regulations and traditions and customs that have followed suit, they're all designed to provide fairness. And when there's a breakdown in fairness, people get it. When they understand at some intuitive level that bad policy comes out of bad process. They understood that while it wasn't a campaign issue, to my surprise, in 2006, that the Republicans were not running the House or the Senate fairly, they people cut through that, excuse me, and understood that something is amiss. Now, what's interesting is that the Republicans are so good at manipulating the process. That's how they took the House over after 40 years of Democratic control. They played all kinds of games. They started hurling ethics attacks at everybody and anybody. They used the House banking system, which they were participating in, but forewarned most of their colleagues to get their balances up as an ethics violation for interest-free loans.
Listening to you say that, and it didn't jump out at me, but hearing you say that, it sounds like bomb throwers and anarchists.
Which
is not the standard image of the Republican Party, of
conservatives.
That's
what the backbenchers were doing. They were throwing bombs. They were often stink bombs. Sometimes they were smoke bombs. But they were. That's exactly what they were doing. You know, when a member of the Republican leadership walks on the House floor with a paper bag on his on his head and is asked why, and he's saying, it says, because I'm too embarrassed to be seen in this institution, that sort of gimmick actually gets people's attention and works. And so you're tearing down the institution.
You both have my attention. Let me break away so that I don't have to do it right in the middle of the next thought. This is the Paula Gordon Show. It is a great pleasure to be with John Dean. We are talking about the American government, which he says elegantly is broken. How Republican rule destroyed the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. We'll be back in just a moment.